Okay, so I would like to introduce our first speaker, Julian Jay from the Women's Canadian Group of NA in, how do you say it? Tijuana?
Guana.
Guana.
Is it Guana?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt. So I'm gonna sit on the table if that's okay, because this is kind of like, yeah. So, and this is pretty cool that it's smaller. I like smaller meetings because they're more intimate usually. This is good. I'm a little nervous, and I've never spoken at an event like this, so this is definitely an honor. I like the reading where it says, like, no one addict fully represents NA, so anything I say, you know, hopefully somebody gets something from it, but anything I say, I'm not NA as a whole, so if it's different, that's okay. So can we just take a minute, though, so I can get out of the way, because one time, my very first lead, I didn't step out of the way, and it was horrible. So can we do that? Okay, guys, so my name's Jillian. I'm an addict. My clean date is February 23rd, 2012. Sandy messaged me and asked me to speak here today, and she said the topic is God of our understanding, and I'm like, whoa, that's like a big thing, because I struggled with that early on. I struggled with that throughout my entire addiction. I thought that everything I had done had left me completely and totally separated from God, and when I was younger, before I picked up a drug, I stole something from a store, and I've heard this here before, that, like, your gut is God. So, like, we have this intuition where if I know I'm doing something wrong, like, I get that gut feeling. And when I go against that gut feeling, I start to experience things like guilt and shame. So when I stole this thing from the store, I think it was makeup or something, because I wanted to fit in with the crowd, this crowd. I wanted to be loved and accepted and belong somewhere, anywhere, because I felt so different. And I knew, and I got that gut feeling, and immediately I was like, oh my God, God's never going to love me anymore. So my motto was always, go big or go home from there on. It was just like, well, I'm not going to be loved and accepted anyway, so I might as well just take off to the races. And I lived like that for 12 years. I lived like that in active addiction, and the first 2 years of my recovery, I still lived off that fear and that guilt and that shame. And so nobody ever in my life was like, if you don't believe in Jesus, you're going to hell. Nobody ever pointed their finger at me and said that. Nobody ever made me feel like God didn't love me. But something in me, this disease, which I can identify with today, something in me told me that the God of my understanding didn't love me. Because I always felt like there was something there. That was never a doubt in my mind. But I thought that there was no room for me because of my behaviors and because of my actions and because of the way that I feel and the thoughts that I have. So that was a very difficult transition. And whenever she said God of our understanding, I was thinking about this too on the way up here. My understanding of things is always changing, always changing. So my understanding of God is always changing and always growing, which is it's kind of scary whenever you're in it and I'm challenged and I'm like, why is this happening? Why do I feel this way? Why do I have these messed up thoughts? Why do I, you know, want to hurt people? Or why do I want to point the finger at other people? Or why do I want to judge whenever I know in my gut that those things are not healthy for my spirit? Those things don't bring me closer to the God of my understanding. Those things are the things that separate me. I separate me. And so that's like, and I think in every step it talks about, you know, a progression. Every step is a progression. So, and a process through. So when I first came here and I worked through the 12 steps formally, like writing, it was simple. It was very, like, you have an understanding of God. You have a belief. You believe in something, whatever that is. And now today it's grown into something bigger, and I'm complicated, so I continue to complicate it, which what I probably need to do is simplify it again, because that's the solution. That is the solution, is to, you know, not complicate spiritual principles, because the spiritual principles are never in conflict with each other. So, it's just crazy, because when she told me this, I was like, I've been in this process recently more, where I've been actually focused on building a relationship with the God of my understanding. And so I've been fluctuating back and forth on a daily basis, multiple times a day, where I experience extreme amounts of faith and then extreme amounts of doubt. And I go back and forth and back and forth and question everything, because that's how my disease comes at me. It makes me question things that are not necessary for me to try to figure out. Like, step one talks about surrender. And I always try to figure out how to surrender, which contradicts itself, period, because I can't figure out how to surrender. I just need to surrender. So this idea of what the God of my understanding is has continued to grow, but it's also continued to be challenged. And that's where I'm at today, is where I keep going back and forth in my head, well, this doesn't sound right, or this doesn't feel right. And then I'm like, wait a minute, this is right. And so for me, what I've been doing, because what I've been taught here is that feelings aren't always fact. And I've also been taught that I'm not going to feel good every day, all the time. I'm not always going to feel God working in my life. That doesn't mean that the God of my understanding isn't working in my life. And so whenever I remember that, I know that even though I don't feel God because of my own doubt and my own self-worth, that doesn't mean it's not there. Doesn't mean that that's not there. And I was actually reading the 11th step this morning, and it broke down, in the step working guide, it breaks down how we all can choose whatever we want. You know, there's nothing that, I think it breaks it down. It starts to break it down in step 3, but it gets a little bit more in depth in step 11, where we all can believe whatever we want. It's just to believe in something, you know, something, because it's a process. And we gain a better understanding, I think, each day. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm so grateful for that, because of my fear of God damning me to hell. Like, I'm like, I'm going to hell, you know. So I'm grateful that I could come in here like that, and I don't have to stay there, you know. But this, it just allows me to know that everybody who's here is supposed to be here, you know. And there's no, like, I don't have to be good to walk into the rooms of NA. You know, I don't have to feel spiritual all the time to walk into the rooms of NA. In fact, that's probably, you know, or that is the reason why we're all here, you know, at the end of the day, is because that first day is like, because I was beat and broken, you know. So like, I struggle with sometimes when I hear in the rooms, I hear, well, I ran a red light, and God was watching out for me, and I didn't get hit. And so I can do whatever I want, because I have this belief and this understanding. And I think this is really where step work helps us identify what is God's will and what is self-will. Because I think that, and I struggle with that because so many of us die. You know, so many of us die, and I do not believe that God loves one person more than another. And so in my mind, like, how do I justify that or understand that? So that in itself is a process as well. And how I've been able to learn to understand that for myself is that there's a difference between God's will and self-will, you know? And I believe that the God of my understanding looks out for me, but I do not believe that the God of my understanding doesn't allow me self-will. And whenever I take my will back, which I'm really, really good at, otherwise I wouldn't be judgmental, otherwise I wouldn't feel guilty, I wouldn't feel shameful or anything like that. When I take my will back, usually that sets into motion things that cause harm, whether it's directly in front of my face, whether I see it or not. I always have the potential to cause harm. And what I learned here is that if I can help somebody, I will, and if I can hurt somebody, I won't, you know. And and whenever I try to sit here and figure out, like, what's God's will for me, like, where am I supposed to work and where am I supposed to live, God, like, I thought God was going to part, like, when I did my first third step, I thought God was going to part the clouds. There was going to be, I legitimately thought, like, I was going to see a burning bush. I was going to be completely and totally willing to do everything. And that's just not how it works here, at least not for me. So whenever I identify with, and I simplify it, and I say, okay, like, how do I help somebody today, and how do I not cause harm in every situation in my life, then I'm allowing the God of my understanding to work through me. And that is so amazing, because then whenever I do the best that I can, and I know, genuinely know, and don't just justify and rationalize my bullshit, you know, and say, oh, I did the best I can whenever I didn't, like, I'm free, I'm not hemmed up, and I'm closer to my God, you know. And I struggle too with this idea that I'm grateful today that, like, we have the ability to, you know, walk in here and be able to choose and be able to look at that. But I struggled with that early on, because I had this damning God that wanted to condemn me, and I thought that I couldn't choose. Even though you guys told me that, I thought that I couldn't choose because of what I had heard. Not because anybody was, you know, telling me I was going to hell, but because of things that I heard. And it's just not like that today. And recognizing and understanding that this is a process has made it easier for myself, and I'm sure other addicts, to build upon my relationship with God. And I know when I'm not, because I used to religiously in the morning, I used to read like seven or eight daily meditational readings. And I used to go out on my porch and pray every morning and smoke a cigarette and probably smoke like 10 cigarettes and drink some coffee. And then life showed up, and I had to move, and I didn't have the capability to do that, and all these things started happening, and I had to figure it out and get things in line, and I stopped doing that, and then I felt disconnected. There was about a year and a half where I stopped writing formally on step work, and I felt that, because what I've learned here is that step work brings me closer to God. And when we feel that, I start to isolate. And I only know what I know. Like, I don't know anymore, and I leave no room to grow. And I leave no room to grow and even start to, you know, work towards a greater understanding of my higher power. And that was another thing, too. Like, I thought that I needed to fully understand. Like, if I don't fully understand, how can I have a relationship with this person? I don't fully understand a lot of things, you know? There is no way for me to fully get into anybody's head and fully know their motives or fully know how they feel or fully know what they're messed up thoughts are or their good thoughts are or any of that stuff. And there's no way for anybody else to know that fully, right? So in step one, whenever I recognize that I have no control over any of this and my life is completely unmanageable, I start to realize then in step two that I need help. And in step three, when I ask for that help, I'm freer. Like here, I found freedom. I always use that word, freedom. That gives me chills. Because left to my own devices and my self-will and not attempting to try to feel God every day, I feel like shit. I feel broken. I feel doubt. I feel self-worthlessness. And in those first three steps is where we get our, or where I got, I'm sorry guys, I keep saying we because I just always feel connected with other addicts. But I start to rely more on the God of my understanding and less on myself and less on people. Other people, because I always needed other people to make me feel good about myself. I still do that shit sometimes, like with my husband, with like wanting him to be okay with me, you know, and making assumptions that he's like not okay with me, and then I'm fearful, and then I'm thinking, and thinking's my problem, and then I make assumptions, and then I say something hurtful or I act hurtful when I do those things. I separate myself, and here. For me, it's all about staying connected. It's all about relying on something greater than me, greater than all of you and me, but all of us collectively, you know, not one individual, because I've done that before, too, and needing this individual to be okay with me in order for me to be okay with me. And when I rely on my higher power, that thing never seems to fall short. Even if the outcome is not what I want it to be in that moment, you know? I've heard people say this before, and it's so true for me that if I got everything that I wanted, I probably wouldn't be here today. God's plan is so much greater than mine. I just need to get out of the fucking way. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear because this is, like, recorded, but it's the truth. But it's the truth, you know, and we can oftentimes, or I can oftentimes, put my self-worth and my value into another person. And that never, my experience tells me that that never filled this void. And then when that person let me down, I'd go to another person and another person, and I would never stop to pray unless I was in deep shit, you know, And you know what, really, about the swearing thing? My God knows that I swear. My God knows that. And that sometimes that those are my prayers. Especially early on. It was like, please fucking help me. Please help me. Please help me not say this. In every situation, please help me not do this. Please help me not hurt this. Please help me not judge this person. Maybe it doesn't really matter because God knows me regardless. It's just whenever I start to listen to the disease, it tells me that my God doesn't care. You have the same God that you had before. That God, if you don't do the right thing, God's not going to love you. God's not going to care. And those are the things that our literature tells us is all we need to believe and fully understand. And when we don't believe, or when I don't believe, I start to feel separated. And I don't like feeling separated. I like to belong. I want to be freer. I know what that looks like. I know what that feels like. And I want to say, like, God is good. God is so good. I don't always feel that way because I question, you know, and I question. And but God is good. I'm not usually good. I'm usually, like, Because I judge people, and because I think these things, I think that, like, God judges me, you know, and God looks at me this way, and I forget that, like, I'm not God. I've learned that in step one. I'm not God. I have no control over, like, other people and all these things, and, like, whenever I recognize that and gain awareness, and I continue on with the steps, like, then I can start to really get into the solution. And then, so here's another thing. So then I can start to love, and I can start to be kind, and I can start to be less judgmental, and I can start to, like, build people up and not tear people down, because the God of my understanding does that for me all the time. All the time. It's just, when am I willing to allow that to occur? When am I willing to surrender? Not figure out how to surrender, but to surrender and let God work in my life. Those are, like, I'm so grateful this is a process, because if it was just, like, I would be here and be done, I'd be screwed. So I think that being open-minded to the fact that maybe God doesn't hate me, and maybe God does forgive me, and maybe God forgives and loves and wants good for me. Doesn't mean everything's always going to be good. Doesn't mean I'm going to have, you know, not going to have troubles and things like that. But God is good. And usually, sometimes, you know, and I've heard this, I don't know how much time I have. I've heard this before, that, like, when we stay in this process and we stay in this program, that sometimes self-will starts to align with God's will. And I believe that. And I also believe that I can get caught up in that. And I can think that, oh, I'm doing the right things today, and I've been doing the right things for all these days in a row, so this thought must be right. And this feeling must be right. And this action that I want to take must be right, because my will starts to align with God's will. It still doesn't mean, like, I have to be vigilant of that. I have to be reminded that I'm an addict and I have a disease. So, like, yes, I believe that, you know, we start to make better decisions here, and, like, my will and God's will start to align, because, like, I don't want to hurt people today. But that doesn't mean that self-will won't allow me to hurt people today. And I need to remember that. And with that, I find humility, that we are all human. I'm human, just like you're human. And this thing, whatever you believe it to be, is taking care of all of us. So I need to remember that I'm human and I'm not God, because that's part of my disease. My disease tells me that I am controller of all these things, and I don't. And I think that that's why we keep coming back. You know, that's why I keep coming back, and because I'm sick. I'm very, very sick, and I love that I've been able to build a relationship with the God of my understanding and continue that process, but I'm still a very sick individual. Like I said, I probably keep sharing about this, because this is the one thing that's been, like, really flaring, is, like, I've been very judgmental. I've been very, like, in my head about, like, why is this person doing this? And why is this person causing harm? And they should know better. There's a question in step one that asks, do you think you should know better by now? And it's like, I have to remember that that question doesn't just apply to me. Because of my self-centeredness, I think, like, this is just for me. And I need to remember that God works in everybody's life. Everybody's life. And I don't have a plan. I don't have a plan. And thank God, because I would make people do things that, I don't know, that are not spiritual. Like, I'd be locking people up for not holding the door for the old lady struggling with her grocery bag. So thank God. But I think that to gain an understanding in any way, shape, or form, I have to be willing to make the decision to continue on with steps. And that's how step three was broken down for me early on, was that I don't have to complicate it. I just have to make a decision. I just have to make a decision to continue on with the steps, because when I break down all the bullshit through step work, all the bullshit that I did and all the bullshit that I feel and think, then that leaves room for me to allow the God of my understanding to come in and work in my life. You know, I was crying on the way up here. Because music is a big thing that helps me connect, so I like jamming out to Caleb, and it's just like, it's overwhelming sometimes, and I think sometimes I get like afraid to tell people that, you know, that I have this overwhelming joy whenever I'm connected to my higher power. And I'm like, I cry all the time. This is the time in my life that I've cried, like, not, like, genuinely cry, like, happiness and just, like, that overwhelming feeling of just being loved and cared for when we're in those moments, you know. And, yeah, so I cry in my car all the time whenever I'm listening to music and connecting with connecting with God. And it's, like, being out here. And driving up here and all the trees and all this shit that is like here for us, you know, and we're all connected. I got a friend who, she doesn't wear shoes. I love her. She doesn't wear shoes because she's connected to the, she's connecting herself to the world that we live in, and connecting herself spiritually to everything that's around us. And it's such a beautiful thing to see that. And I don't even know if we believe in the same idea of God, but we both have an understanding of like being connected and the importance of that, and how it frees our spirit. So that's where I think I've come to terms with, it's okay to choose, you know, because I thought if I chose and I picked and chose here and here and here, that that was another no-no, you know. And so when I see all these beautiful women and men, you know, gaining their own understanding and being connected and being spiritual, like, that's God. My sponsor said to me, I'll say this now, shut up. My sponsor said to me one time when I was really struggling that I need to start looking for the God in everything. You know, and for me that means, like, looking for the good in everything. Because what I do is not always good. But and I don't see the bigger picture. I see what's right in front of me, and my higher power sees everything that's going on, everything. And so whenever I start to really look at and identify with the God in everything, I feel more connected, and I don't feel like judging people, and I don't feel like hurting people, and it's all about like practicing those principles to get there. You know, to get there, and a lot of this stuff is granted to us, but we have to be willing, or I have to be willing to be open to receiving that. And I'm grateful, like, I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful that we're in the middle of a bunch of trees, and I don't know, I think I might hang out a little bit, because this is pretty cool, so... I don't know. That's all I have. Thanks for letting me share.
Yeah. All right. And our second speaker, I would like to introduce to you is Scott N. from the Simple Solutions Group of NA.
It's my kid. That wasn't a weird thing. So, just to preface everything, I'm an addict. My name is Scott. That would have been strange. I just kissed a random baby. So, thank you, Jillian. Really cool. I heard like four words because I was freaking out in the back corner. But so Tuesday, I went to a meeting. I work out of town and had some time at home and. Went to a meeting Tuesday, and one of my good friends asked me to speak, and when she gave me the topic, I was, like, really excited about it, because there's so much, and I can't be wrong. There's no such thing as, like, you talk about a God of our understanding. One of the things, and I'm the same as Jillian, like, my process has changed so much since I came into the rooms. and it reminded me of like my journey through step 1, 2, and 3 in early recovery. I've been clean and free since October 24th of 2012. Wasn't my first clean date. I bounced in and out of the rooms in this area for a while, but when I decided to stay clean, I got a sponsor, and he took me through the first couple steps, and then I realized he wasn't the man that I really wanted to sponsor me. So I worked back through 2 and 3 with a gentleman that I love and really respect today. But one of the first things he taught me was that you better get a God before you need a God. Right, and so in our literature, it talks about how once we get through step 1, we're left with this vacuum. And my journey through 2 and 3 is what really helped me fill that vacuum, because there's like a billion questions in step 1 in the step working guide, and it like is so thorough. And looking back on it, and with a different set of eyes, like it, my answers are a lot different, but. Going through 2 and 3, like when I started working those steps, and obviously 2 first, building into 3, I went into developing a God of my understanding with roadblocks. I wanted to know why. I truly did not believe there was a God at that point in time. There's some things that have happened in my life that a couple of different car accidents where I've lost people close to me that... really changed my way of beliefs, and I didn't believe. So my higher power, and I'll say God a lot just because I'm lazy and it's quicker than saying higher power. I don't have a dogmatic deity that I pray to, and thankfully in this process that's okay. I grew up Catholic, and just not what I believe today. Right, wrong, or indifferent, if that's what you believe. I'm not here to offend anybody. I was asked to share my experience on this. And that's the other thing about a beautiful place like this, is we get so much experience from people. In the smaller area we're from, and some of the meetings and the speckled amounts of clean time, you get a lot of opinions. At places like this, you get experience. And it's groundbreaking to me. There's always something earth-shattering that I hear at this retreat, and it might be super simple, and it might be in a conversation walking from one meeting to the next, or it might be from one of the main speakers. But going through this process, I came in with a lot of roadblocks, like there is no God because of this, there is no God because of that. My higher power is love. A lot of people say, like, if you can have acronyms for it, you can do whatever you want, use the rooms as your higher power. I was taught there's only 3 suggestions. It has to be loving, caring, and a power greater than myself. And mine checks all 3 boxes. Now, when I got clean, it was not hard to find a power greater than myself. I was battered and broken. And similar to how I chose a sponsor, I chose a higher power that was loving and caring. Now, with the perspective that I had when I got clean, and looking at all these obstacles and looking at all these roadblocks, when I would look at the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I would look at the people who were promiscuous. I would look at the people who were selling dope in the rooms. I would look at the sick things that go on with people with various amounts of clean time. And I was looking at the negative. And what this man helped me do was change my perspective. I wasn't looking at love. I wasn't necessarily looking at hate. I was looking at the absence of love, or the absence of God. So what it helped me do through my process of 2 and 3 was understand how to flip my perspective and look at the love in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Look at the people who keep coming back. Look at the people who stay clean and get through things. You know, I would hear people talk about their version of God, and I would judge them based on like the context of it and those things. And then I would see somebody go through something that is gut-wrenching. I've seen people lose parents in here. I've watched my friend bury his brother. I've seen friends lose their children and stay clean through all of it. And to me, that helped me open my eyes to the belief that whatever your God is, like whatever you believe in, just please believe in something. And it comes back to that get a God before you need a God thing. I truly believe, like, my God has walked me through my process even before I got clean. Coppin Dope in Kensington and places that a guy like me should never be. Really, nobody should be. It's a toxic environment. There's a lot of absence of God there. But I believe that, like, to get me to where I am today, there had to be a power greater than myself that was loving and caring, that was guiding me through this process. There's no doubt in my brain. So when I look back through my process of getting and staying clean and working these first three steps, it's easy for me to see that there is a power greater than myself working in my life. Now, I like I said, I had a lot of roadblocks going in. But when you thoroughly work these steps, there's barriers that get broken down through intimate relationships like I have with my sponsor. When I work these steps, and that's the value in the spiritual principles. Like Jillian said, the spiritual principles are never in conflict. So as I learn about them and build and understand how one compounds into the next, or they're independent of each other, it helps me understand. I like to overcomplicate things too, and this topic can be extremely simple or extremely complicated for me. I choose the simple route today just because it's easy for me to see how a power greater than myself is working in my life. Anytime I question the presence of a God, I look at my five-month-old son, and that's immediately shattered. Like, it might be late nights and things like that, and he's keeping you up and you're tired. And at 4 o'clock in the morning, he just gets this big smile, and like everything is washed away. All of that frustration, all of that, well, I need to sleep because I have to get up in an hour, whatever the case may be. I realize that my higher power, which is love, is acting in my life on a daily basis every time that little thing takes a breath. And it's an amazing feeling. But the journey is something that continues for me today. And like when I started, even through like the wisdom that this man shared with me on 2 and 3, I thought in my head that I was atheist. I thought that I was an atheist. And I started to look more into that and really break it down. And I realized that I'm the exact opposite of that. It's not that I didn't believe in the God that I grew up with, but I also didn't believe there was no God. What I believe is that everything is right. The flexibility through that, like, my journey through 2 and 3 took me outside of Narcotics Anonymous. My sponsor, and I've worked it a couple times with a couple different guys changing sponsors. One of them suggested that I go experience or learn about other religions. And I did that in some form or fashion. I talked to some people that grew up in different religions. I read a lot about some Eastern religions. And I don't align with any particular one, but through that process I come to understand that I feel everybody is right. It's not for me to tell anybody that their God is wrong, or again, it's that love, that acceptance that I've learned here in Narcotics Anonymous, that it's not for me to tell you your God is wrong. Like, I can't pray the wrong way. I haven't really hit my knees to pray in a long time. I pray differently than some people. There are times I hit my knees. Early on in my child's life, we had to take him to Children's Hospital for something, and that was one of the times, and people can call it jackpot or foxhole prayers, but when I'm in that spot, I don't care what you call it. When it's about my kid, it's bigger than me at that point in time. You know, I heard early on, at times, like, God doesn't give you anything you can't handle, and some of those things, and I think differently than that. Not that that's wrong if that's what you think, but I truly believe that my God gives me more than I can handle, so I have to ask for help. I have to hit my knees sometimes. I have to stop and say, because if I'm continually faced with obstacles that I can fix or solve or avoid on my own, I get more into that self-will than God's will. And sometimes they do align, sometimes they don't align. But I honestly believe, like, you ever been standing in a rainstorm and you're like, this is going to slow down, like you have no way to get out of it, and it just starts coming harder and harder and harder. I've done this recently at work. I was standing out there, and we had a bunch of important things going on, and I was like, all right, this has got to let up soon. And then it just comes harder, and it's steady for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. I just started laughing, and guys are like, what are you laughing about? And I was like, you know, that's like a microcosm of my life. Like, when things are being, like, slammed on me, I'm like, what next? And then something else hits. So I've learned to just shut up and quit asking what next. You know, you roll with the punches. And I need Narcotics Anonymous. I need the experience of members. I need you people. I need the hugs some days. It's really all it was. Like, when I came into the rooms, the hugs made me uncomfortable. You know, the drug that I chose that took me to the end of my road was not a social drug. I was in my parents' basement doing what I did for a long time and, like, avoiding daylight. So when I came in, it made me uncomfortable to get a hug. But as I bounced in and out and didn't have the commitment and the willingness and the open-mindedness and the honesty to stay in this program, I started to crave those hugs. That's the only thing I wanted. Some days as I pushed the plunger down, I would cry and understand, like, all I wanted was a hug from somebody in NA to tell me that it was going to be okay. And that's why when I got clean and moved to Pittsburgh, I chose a home group that has a hug line that's sometimes 40 people long. And people avoid the meeting because they dislike it. Like, oh, there's too much time spent there. And what I was taught and what I heard early on is, like, that hug can sometimes be a flickering spirit. Your flickering spirit can connect with somebody else. And not one of those, like, one arm, like, and that's fine, but, like, there's genuine love in that home group with people that you connect with, and you see them coming back, or you see the pain in their eyes. And, you know, you just get, like, a genuine hard hug, and somebody says, welcome home, or I love you, or I'm proud of you, or something like that. Like, these 7-cent key tags that we get for 30, 60, 90 days, whatever they cost these days, like, that's significant to us. Like, at 30 days, 60 days, 90 days clean, it's the symbol of what that means. Like, in society, congratulations, you didn't stick a needle in your arm for 30 days, or you didn't smoke crack for 30 days, whatever the case may be. For us, we know how hard that is. And for me, I understand, like, that has to be the grace and mercy of a power greater than myself and the program of Narcotics Anonymous. Those are the only two things that allow me to stay there. Because if it were for me, like Jillian said, if I got what I wanted or what I thought I deserved, I wouldn't be here. I make no mistake in that because I didn't think. And some days I don't think in this process that I deserve everything I have. I don't deserve a loving family. You know, I'm an addict. I suffer from low self-esteem and low self-worth. That's my disease attacking me at all periods and points in time. And it takes an active program of Narcotics Anonymous to combat that disease. You know, I've also been taught that I've got this disease in my brain that screams, and I've got a solution in my heart that whispers. And it's only through Narcotics Anonymous can I quiet that screaming in my brain and listen to what's in my heart. And what's in my heart is love. It's natural for me. Like, I'm an empathetic person. There was somebody crying in a meeting the other night, and I started to tear up. And, like, my pride as a man and my ego and things sort of pushed that aside. But and I was emotional when I was using, but I'm so much more emotional today. I cry listening to music all the time. Every Sunday when I drive back to work, I work 4 hours from my home. The first hour of my drive is very teary. And then I'll, like, get it together and start to drive, and then I hear another song, and it's about love or my family, or there's this one particular artist who wrote a whole album to his son, and it's like 45 minutes of straight, like, not bawling, but, like, tears, because, one, I miss him, and I love him, I love my family, and I'll miss them, but at the same time, it's like, I can feel that today. I feel, like, deep in my heart, the love that I have for them, and I never felt that using. Like, nobody ever said, I love you, when I'm shooting heroin. My parents did, but I didn't want to hear it. I just wanted them to go to sleep so I could steal off them. you know, the journey of finding a power greater than myself, and it's funny that, you know, the retreat's called The Journey Continues, and that's a kind of symbolic for me because this is an ongoing process. I haven't found the God of my understanding. It's a very expansive thing for me. My brain continues to process different things that different people have as a God of their understanding. As I learn about it, I learn to respect that and might take a little sample from here and take a little sample from there. But it's truly like some days I just look up at the magic of the world, the universe. You know, one of my good friends always talks about, like, we're all just stardust. You know, and I truly believe that. Like, whatever religion you believe in, just believe in something. You know, like I said, the beauty of the process is my understanding when I came in about a higher power or God was so narrow. It was so dogmatic, and like I said, now, like, it's expansive. I truly believe in everything. I really would like to thank the committee for asking me to speak. Thankfully, it's early, so I can enjoy the rest of the day. I love this retreat. It's one of my favorites, and has some symbolism in my recovery and in my journey, staying clean and finding a higher power. It's just fun watching, like, people grow in this process, including myself. You know, sometimes I don't recognize the growth until I see it in other people. Or somebody will come to me for advice, and I'm like, you're really asking me? And then I sit back and we talk through something, and I learn something and they learn something. That's my God working in my life. Like I said, I don't have, like, a picture. When I pray, I don't have, like, a picture of a particular thing that my God is. But I do know that my God works through people. So when I asked for things, like, early in recovery, I was praying for things, and what I got was an opportunity for... you know, when I prayed for, like, peace or whatever, I got the opportunity to practice peace. I failed a lot of times, usually driving, and some of those things, like, there's some symbolism behind it, but I started to learn how to understand and respect the power of prayer at that point, because I don't pray for insignificant things. Like, you know, I meditate a lot, sometimes moving, there's different forms of it for me, but, like, somewhere after I get done crying and get on the turnpike and start driving east, I get into, like, some deep thought, and to me that's meditation. The prayer ahead of that is just, like, thoughts about the people that I love, and I hope this person's good, and you know, we've got this coming up within our family, with my extended family, with my NA family, like, how can I be there to help them? How can I be of service to the program that saved my life? And the only reason any of that is happening is because of a power greater than myself. Even clean, but without a program, I'm a very selfish person. With a program, I can be a very selfish person, but as I'm learning about these spiritual principles, I get further from self-centered and closer to God-centered. You know, so the power that happens at this retreat is something that I can't mistake. Like, a couple years ago, we were driving up here last night and saw this big full moon. It was gorgeous. And I remember sitting up on the in the field a couple years ago, sitting with a friend who was going through a really tough time, and we could hear the Friday night opening speaker going on, and everybody was laughing and stuff, and we were both bawling, and they weren't happy tears. Like, it wasn't like, I'm so happy to see you. I was grieving the loss of a pet that he helped me through, and he was grieving the loss of a relationship that, cool thing to see how this process works. They just got engaged, so you never know how things work out. Obviously my pet didn't come back, but that would be weird. But I've learned, like, how that love can process, and I have another dog now that is, like, even more loving and caring than any pet I've ever seen in my life. Like, he knows when we're hurting, and he's somebody, he's like one of us, man. He was abused, he's a rescue, and probably the most loving animal I've ever seen in my life. All those things, like, that's the easiest way for me to identify love and a higher power is to look at something like that. Unconditional love. We get it here. But I'm starting to ramble and talk about pets and all kinds of stuff. So thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm an addict. My name is Scott. I'm going to keep coming back.